Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Alright, so I'm going to just take some sound bites, some little pieces, some quote mines from some article written by Richard Currier. Just counter argue, but there's really no point because the argument is just a straw man. It's not anywhere close to actually getting to, I can't say all of it's not even close, but I mean the substance of it, 90% of it or 95% of it isn't really on the subject, frankly. And, you know, it's in the title of the word antinatalism. It kind of saying something about giving birth and having kids. you know, I'd say it's a little imperfect just because the natalism part implies raising kids, which is a little different than having them. But regardless, clearly the subject is negative, being negative on the idea of procreation. It doesn't need to say anything more about what you do with the current existers. You know, they're sort of irrelevant. The point is prevention. The point isn't annihilation or destruction or any of that crap. So it's like making an argument about, say, heroin addiction and saying, well, heroin addiction is a bad thing. Okay? And that you should prevent people from becoming addicted to heroin. Now, by saying that, you're not saying, well, let's kill all the heroin addicts. Yeah. I mean, it's just cheating the argument. Now, I would argue that I'm willing to argue the argument from, yes, life is bad enough that annihilating it is clearly the rational thing to do. that it will, as a whole, produce negative, and there's no reason in enduring any more pain and suffering because the product we're producing is of no capacity, no value. No, there's no real positives to fix any of the real negatives, and therefore no hope. But that's not what he's arguing. He's arguing antinatalism. He's not arguing against, say, effelism. And again, the effelist argument is a little more complicated in the sense that the only reason it says that we have to take an action, okay, besides saying you're being immoral or unethical, more precisely, that you're committing a crime against something's rights not to be experimented on. Frankenstein's monster has a right to say, no mas, no thank you. Okay, I don't want to be version 775, you know. I mean, that just popped into my mind, the Aliens movie, you know, where they remade Ripley, you know. There's a good little bit of understanding there, just what it cost to make a new Ripley, you know, that you had to make a bunch of failures first. And then even when you make the new Ripley, she's got to live in a shitty world. Not a win. Anyway, you know, hard to feel good about it. You know, oh yeah, it's a great success. No, it's a great success in fighting evil. It's not a great success in ever reaching any kind of promised land. So, I just bring that up because this guy does a lot of ragging on Christianity. Okay, so you can figure out that belief in that particular fable isn't too smart. I haven't seen him pick on the other fables, but whatever. So he has some capacity to reason, but he also is a free willer, so he's, you know, in the really lame and contrived and bullshit manner, you know, the compatibilism bullshit, which is just some sort of, well, we psychologically have to believe we have free will. It's not the truth, you know, but somehow if we believe it, it makes us a better person. So he's using the same kind of rationalization the Christians use, that, well, it doesn't matter whether it's the truth or not. It's a good story, and if people believe it, they'll be better people. Now, there's no evidence that happens, but, let's just go with that fake, false, and phony premise and then say, I'm going to talk the truth, when you're not talking anything that's true. So I really don't want to argue free will, but yeah, the fact that somebody can't figure this out, okay, they're doing their I'm an intellectual thing. I can play with words and I can write miles. I mean, you should see the miles and miles of crap he wrote on this subject. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. I mean, I won't get through the, you know, I won't get through 1% of it, you know, in this video. It's all just words. It's just all a bunch of, you know, forcing things to fit. You know, and that's what you need all these extra words for, is because you're trying to force something to fit. You know, if the argument was there to be made that life's a good thing automatically, no problems, then you could make that argument, but you can't. Okay, so you don't. So you have to do all this talking to kind of convince people that somehow it does make sense to force a consciousness into existence because you have some notion that it's probably going to be better off somehow, you know, when you can't make up the story about how it's better off because it's not in a bad place of any kind. It doesn't have, you know, a bathroom to clean. It doesn't have, you know, a leaky roof. It doesn't have any problems to fix. It doesn't have an ego problem. It doesn't have a I need to win problem. Doesn't have any of that problem. You know, it's not a soccer player, it's not a ballerina, it's not a, you know, imagine if you had to be, you know, if you were all of these things and you had to be the winner in all of these categories, you know, that's just an awful lot of work to do, isn't it? Yeah. You know, for what? For nothing. For a song and a dance. So, again, that's the simplest argument. They're all for naught. This is the Shakespeare thing, you know. For what? All this, you know, bullshit. For what accomplishment? Gratification of kind of very base desire. Yes, you ate your gruel and said yummy. Even if it sucked because you were really hungry. Not because there was anything logical about it. All right. Antinatalist holds that being alive causes suffering, while having living things makes it possible to create something called torture. Yes, it can happen. Right, that's the price you're paying for it. So there will be suffering. You could say that statement and say, yes, that's... And we're talking about sentient life, okay? So we're not just saying being alive like being a protozoa or something, because that doesn't have a brain. The brain's creating the factual event of being capable of enduring something called pain, okay, misery, unpleasantness, okay, it's a something your brain synthesizes. Without your brain synthesizing, you can't feel anything, and there's no you to feel it, okay, such as being alive is better. What? So the first sentence doesn't work for me. All right, animal holds that being alive causes suffering such that not being alive is better. Not being injected into an addiction, yes, is better. You're better off not being a heroin addict. You're better off not being forced to march to the orders of billions of years of evolution and to pretend, okay, there's something other... something else for you to do, but stop bad things from happening. You made it possible, the living things make it possible for bad things to happen. Bad things can't happen if there's no living things in the universe. Right? If I have a mechanical universe full of planets and galaxies and all that crap, but I don't have any little furry bunnies in it, you know, there's no little brains to harass or harm, then there's absolutely nothing I could do that would make any goddamn difference. So anything that happens in that universe can't matter because it can't affect the feeling thing. And if you can't affect the feeling thing, there's no ethics, there's no decency, there's no value in the universe. It is valueless. And yes, the whole point is that once you create the precious, then you have an obligation to protect the precious. And to invent something, to have to waste its time taking care of something that shouldn't exist in the first place, is stupid. Okay. This entails killing everyone and yourself. Okay, so, you know, the argument is that you are an addict. Okay, so, I mean, again, the heroin analogy is perfectly suitable. Or, you know, you could say addiction to any kind of drug that, you know, does damage. And, you know, you could even say alcoholism or any of this stuff that, you know, creates people who are in a miserable circumstance. You wouldn't want to be them. You wouldn't want to be living their self-destructive and destructive to everybody around them life. And so you're just saying, why make addicts? Yes, addiction isn't a good thing. So until you can make a human being that isn't born, okay, hungry and needy, then you don't make human beings or any other kind of creature. All right. But there's no obligation to kill anything. Again, it's just this is how they want to cheat the argument. Okay, and so then if I'm going to cheat the argument, I can say you all have a pathological sickness. You're sadists. You enjoy watching things suffer because you can control their pain. All right, because you need control. You need to feel you're superior. So you need inferior beings to exist so you can feel superior. I mean, I can just demean and diminish everything you say and everything that means something to you by just lying about what you're really saying. You know, so it's just, so he starts with this first sentence that's just a gigantic slander. He doesn't give a fuck about the truth of the subject, the logic involved. The simple truth that this really does have to do with whether, you know, how we do this risk aversion thing, how we understand what we're allowed to impose, how much of a rapist are you allowed to be, how far can you go? Okay, you've handed the girl the drink. Now, how far are you allowed to go before you're a trespasser? Okay, did you give the drink to her in sincerity? You know, because you want her to have a good time? Or did you give her the drink because it's the first step to creating the human being you can exploit? You know, and when does the crime begin? And the argument is natalism is automatically defeated by the first act. Why are you doing this? Why do you think you have a right to play Frankenstein or God if you want the prettier version, right? The prettier version is you're playing God. You have some sort of benevolent impulse. You want to do something a favor and create a little slave to your ideology. Or whatever the fuck you're thinking, right? What was God's idea? Let me put things in jeopardy. I'll put them on a tightrope, okay, over a thing called hell, okay, with the ambition of getting to heaven. And I'll put all these obstacles. I'll put whores and all kinds of things in their way. You know, a fat, annoying wife. I'll put all kinds of crap in their way and say, let's see if I can make you trip. That's your benevolent God theory, right? That's the one that persuades people. And you're arguing with anti-natalists? You know, come on. It's almost too silly. I mean, he understands how religion is just a manipulation and, you know, mass psychology warfare. And yet, here he goes, playing the same games. All right. To try and avoid this consequence, as anti-natalists do. So again, even this idea of calling, anti-natalism doesn't have a Bible, okay? So you can't argue about how the books got into the Bible and all this other crap. So you really have to argue with it as a subject, and you have to say, well, what's the kernels of the subject? Well, the word is anti-natalism. And again, he's not talking about anti-natalism, he's talking about life-hating. So just call us life haters. So put people in the category of saying life haters, or, you know, people who believe it's insufficiently efficient. Okay, life is insufficiently efficient. So insufficiently efficienters. You know, or some other rhetoric, but this is just such crap to sit there and say you're going to define what, why people are anti-natalists and what they're, how they would explain to you why they are, okay, why they think it's a bad idea to be a heroin addict, for example. And you're going to pigeonhole all of those philosophies, okay. With an equivocation fallacy like suicide and murdering billions causes suffering, therefore we ought not to commit suicide or exterminate people. Well, the fact is that we live in a world where we like to be able to give people every benefit of the doubt that they have a right, okay, to control their destiny. So that would be an obligation to say, yes, I won't mess with your destiny if you don't mess with mine. Now that's where the trespass comes in, because they are messing with your destiny when they have kids, because that's how you got here. That's how somebody who would say, I'm a little displeased with being put in this stupid tightrope situation where I'm not given very good choices. I don't want to go to fairy princess heaven, okay? I don't want to go sit in lines to kiss Jesus's feet or some kind of bullshit, okay? Heaven sounds like a version of a hell. The hell certainly looks like hell. I mean, yeah, I don't want nails stuck in my eyes forever. So I'm given two idiotic choices and then said, make your choice. Well, fuck you. So, yes, obviously we all understand that we are psychologically dependent, okay? And so all of us, I don't think anyone ever commits suicide without some, just a little bit of apprehension about what the fuck they're doing, what kind of line they're crossing. So, obviously they have to be compelled and pushed, because there's nothing about any of it that's attractive. The whole thing is an ugly version of a reality, and they're ugly choices. There's no beautiful woman to go have sex with. It's all either ugly or uglier. All right. So anyway, so again, so why turn this into an extermination argument when the argument is that, no, all that's required is grandfather yourselves out. The heroin addicts can live. And they can just keep doing what they're doing. They just can't make new heroin addicts. Okay, that's the rule. That's benign enough. That's socially responsible enough. That's giving your, it's giving the necessary and due respect that the social contract should get. All right, the social contract is important. People should have respect for the rules. But clearly, if I had the capacity to do it, if somebody gave me the job, okay, of helping out, being the angel of death, okay, there certainly would be lives I could tell right off the bat, this guy doesn't need to live another day, because nothing good's going to happen. He ain't going to make anything good happen, and even for himself, nothing good's going to happen. So don't pretend we can't know quite confidently even, okay, that there are people that need to be, you know, if you're going to use this word exterminated, that need to be terminated, okay, that the world's a better place without them. Every sentient creature is in less jeopardy because they don't exist. You know, those are going to be real facts. Okay, only proves the point they are contradicting themselves. So there's nobody he's going to actually refute. So no individual. So he's not going to take Benatar's quotes and do anything with them. He's not going to argue the argument that's actually being made by the people arguing it. Okay, he's just going to create this fake argument and say, why is the fake argument wrong? And again, I could do the same thing to him. I could turn his philosophy into mush and pretend it's all some sort of psychological problem he has. You know, it's just cheating. Alright, if becoming dead is suffering, so whatever this is, dying, that's how becoming dead is. Dying is obviously, in lots of cases, okay, the vast majority of cases, an unpleasant process. You know, and can be extremely and extraordinarily unpleasant, like having to gnaw your arm off in an earthquake. I mean, insanely bad. I mean, so bad that you can't even imagine it. It's so bad. Okay, it's beyond your capacity to even try to, you know, give yourself a sample of it, because you can't manifest even the idea of how bad that kind of torture would be. All right, then how can being dead be better than being alive? Okay, they are contradicting themselves. If becoming dead is suffering, I don't even know what that means. So again, that's the false becoming dead. So he's not calling it being dead. I mean, that's all you can do. You can either be dead, all right. So that's one thing, not existing. So you didn't exist before you were born, and I don't think you have some idea that, oh, I was in a terrible place. Like the non-existent Martians, I was just sitting in a line, desperate to get my ticket out of hell. No, that didn't happen. So again, becoming non-existent would be probably a fairer term, is suffering. Well, no one's saying that. So that argument doesn't make any sense. You know, I don't know what that even means. If becoming dead is suffering, then how can being dead be better than being alive? You can't even make any sense out of it. So this is one of the arguments I would make in defense of antinatalism, is why doesn't your side have the courage, okay, to allow people to kill themselves in the most medically expedient and clean way possible? That is, they just, like, they're going in for a surgery and they're put to sleep and they never wake up. Okay, so it's as benign and graceful as it can get. And once you give people those choices, what do you think will happen? How much pain and suffering do you think people would endure if they did have the free choice to say, you know what, I really don't want to face this. I don't want to deal with this, and I really don't have all that good a prospect for my future. There's not something I really need to do so desperately. Like, there's a movie coming out, and I want to see the new movie. Yeah, but I don't think I want to endure, you know, 5 weeks of chemo or something to see the movie. So, yeah, maybe I just avoid all that crap. I'm just saying, there would be many moments in my life where I'd just say, yes, let me out. Okay, if out is easy, snap of my fingers, I'd say, yes, time to go. So I'm just arguing, if it was that simple, snap your fingers, you live or you exist or you don't exist. No dying involved. No having to go through the process of falling on the daggers. Then isn't it less scary? I mean, if all you're falling into is an abyss where you fall asleep and don't wake up, then the tightrope is a lot more fun, isn't it? You know, but if there's daggers that you know are going to stab you in important places, well, that would make it a lot more worrisome about failure, right? But failure would be non-consequential in a way if all you knew is you're going to land in fluffy pillow and fall asleep. You know, that's not very scary, frankly. So again, you're just cheating. We're all psychologically brutalized a bit by what we see of other people's deaths. So if you've seen any of that stuff go on, you know how bad it can get and how bad it is. And that does create some apprehension in even the most ardent believer that their existence is dangerous and unproductive. It's still a huge, giant leap to make, okay, to risk dying badly. Dying badly is a rational thing to fear. A bad death is a real monster. It's not a fake little abominable snowman or something. It's a real, it's not a fable. It's not a religious story. It's not imaginary free will, okay? It's a real thing, okay? The only reason one can ever coherently be against mass suicide, the only reason one can ever coherently be against mass suicide, so who's against mass suicide? I'm just curious. You know, I'm just saying, well, people of their own volition choosing to die is not a problem. Dying badly is a problem. So mass suicide drinking drain cleaner, yeah, that's no good. But mass suicide dying in a very graceful manner as you just gracefully fall asleep and don't wake up, why not? Why should that bother me as an event? What should concern me? That people who have chosen, okay, because they saw some reason, and they're acting on that reason. Why should I object? What is this? I don't even understand why he wrote this sentence either. It doesn't even make any sense. The only reason one can ever coherently be against mass suicide. So there's only one way you can be against mass suicide. Okay, here we go. Is to admit that staying alive is better than being dead. So obviously I don't admit that. So I guess I don't understand. Yes, I'm not against mass suicide. So he's saying there's a bunch of antinatalists who are against mass suicide. And again, there clearly are people who will say that somehow people shouldn't kill themselves because I don't know why they would say that, okay? I don't know for what purpose. Because they think they should live because somebody else needs them. So they should be slaves to somebody else's needs or some kind of other crap like that. Why would I ever... Why beyond saying, you know, what I do say, which is, I think, if if you have some good ethical memes in your head, ideas... that you should do work in the world to prevent future suffering. But yes, if you're yourself a victim of suffering, I'm not going to force you to hang around to help fix the suffering, to try to help prevent the future suffering. But it is a real thing to do. I mean, every life you prevent is your own, so to speak. It's one you don't have to live. You know, it's another failure you don't have to go through the process of redundantly doing over and over and over again. Okay. Is to admit that staying alive is better than being dead. Well, so again, there's no evidence that this comparison is part of a real argument beyond just saying the Martians aren't in hell. They're not in purgatory. They're not in some negative condition that needs to be fixed. There's nothing broken about their non-existent bicycle. We don't need a repairman. We don't need to intervene. Nothing needs to come to the rescue. They don't have cancer. The fact is, there's no good they need. So whatever good you think you can give them, the point is they can't use it as a practical matter. It's not going to fix their condition. And that, I suppose, would be one of these, again, axioms, that you think you can improve something by not fixing it. Okay, that somehow you can make an improvement that wasn't, in fact, being broken. That there's some advancement or enhancement, okay, that is in some way contrivable or conceivable. And I guess I would argue that I think that would all be mush, that you're just making that story up. That something that can't be harmed can't be improved by making it harmable. That's not an improvement. So the fact that you gain some gratification in taking a piss or a poo or eating your dinner or whatever, fucking whatever you call a bitch, you know, you think those are all somehow outside the bounds of critique goods, that they're somehow absolute goods, when I would argue that no, they're just satisfying negative conditions. You're just fixing conditions that if you don't do something about, they become tedious and annoying and irritating and cause you, give you a headache, so to speak. Or whatever other part's going to ache. Okay, but that's renounced. But that renounces the entire premise that antinatalism is built on. What we are left with is incoherent nonsense. So we know the premise that antinatalism is built on is prevention. So it has nothing to do with current existers beyond making a statement about an act the current existers can commit, that is, making new Frankensteins. So you could just say the Earth, as an analogy, is covered in Frankenstein's monster. Frankenstein is dead, okay? Frankenstein was evolution. Evolution's dead, okay? And we have sort of killed it, so let's understand we're really not being physically evolved anymore. We're being devolved, modified. So yes, the God is dead, okay? There's no creator involved anymore. It's not part of the story. There's just the monsters, and you're just saying, should somebody make them another monster? And the argument can simply be made that, well, if you're on balance, there's nothing you can gain here. Because the only way the monster gains gratification is fixing something that should have been broken in the first place. It's just correcting a negative condition that wouldn't exist if the monsters didn't exist. So, yeah, you could justify having a kid if your kid's going to cure cancer. Because you can make some argument that's going to prevent more harm than it's going to cause. But it's only going to prevent more harm than it's going to cause because somebody made the people capable of having the cancer. Somebody made the problem. So if you don't make the problem, you don't need the solution. If you don't make the disease, you don't need the cure. I mean, you know, to say that that logic is summed up somewhere in this crappy paragraph would be a gigantic lie. Okay. So you're just cheating the argument. All right, and then he goes in the second paragraph and just does the cult argument. He's just a cult. All right, so I'll read that. So I got through 0.001%, okay, of the crap he writes. Ugh, it's just terrible. Ugh. All right, I'll be back. All right, we're back. So the second paragraph, I'd really like to get to the second section, you know, where he says it's all incoherent, you know, that there's no facts here. But anyway, I can't get through this preface. All right, if being dead actually was better than being alive, we should all seek death and indeed give everyone death. So he thinks that people's instincts, okay, their native structure is to eat vegetables, you know, to eat foods that are good for them. So he thinks because that's the optimum performance that somehow we're all optimally performing. And that we all do things rationally and logically. When obviously the world is just covered with the illogic. I mean, our filth and our garbage and global warming, all of it is just evidence that that's not what we do, okay? That logic doesn't work on us because we are selfish and we are driven by our lust. I mean, if we were to fuck things logically, right? Why would we have sex with women? They're covered in bacteria, blah, 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 blah. I can make a sterile device to have sex with, you know. I mean, you can make all kinds of logical arguments against everything we do, you know, is partially motivated by the irrationality of our biological construction. And it dictates what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. So, yes, we're logical enough that we don't want to poo in the streets, and so we figure out how to make toilets, and we can make it convenient enough and all that kind of stuff. We can do some things to protect ourselves from our own impulses and our expedience. And that's what we do. We even pass laws against some kind of stuff just to make it out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. You know, the hookatoriums, for example, and all this other... all these things that might trigger us by impulse. Okay. So don't pretend that this is some, oh, we always do the right thing. We're just these completely logical beings that do the right thing and do the logical thing. So just too stupid to say because people are doing... So his own argument against Christianity, he's defeating his own arguments by saying somehow because the majority is doing it, it must be the right thing. It must be the perfectly logical, greatest, brilliantest thing to believe in a stupid religious fable because most people are doing it. I mean, you know, so the argument from popularity, that's what we just heard here. It's popular, therefore it must be the right thing. So it's popular for people to think they're better off alive than dead. Even though they can know that, well, I don't really know that, do I? Because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know when, you know, I'm going to start pooing blood. And, you know, that's what you do when you start getting older. You start thinking about, you know, instead of wanting to gain something in your life, you start just protecting yourself against all of the disability coming for you. I mean, I fell down running twice this year, you know. And I was lucky. I didn't break my hip, but nothing, you know. But I mean, fell right on asphalt, for fuck's sake. You know, because things aren't working. You know, I did have a stroke a few years ago, and that's probably what's causing it, because, you know, things didn't learn quite well. And so things don't work entirely the way I intend them to, or wish them to. But anyway, that's all I'm defending myself against now. Now, it's not the joy of running, it's the joy of not being a cripple. You know, my standards are getting lower and lower and lower. And that isn't just psychology. Complete bullshit. I mean, you know, all of a sudden it's okay because I have a tumor growing out of my forehead. All of a sudden tumors in the forehead are attractive. I mean, aren't I just, I'm just rationalizing an excuse saying I'm still winning when no, I'm clearly losing ground. And all I'm doing now is turning victory into I'm not failing as much. And so that's all you become, right? So one stage in your life, you might be chasing being an A student. And another phase in your life, you're just saying, I'm not an F student. I'm way above being F. Yeah. So to not concede that, you know, a big chunk of this argument is just covered in psychological crap, okay, is just such a denial. Especially when this is guy, like I said, he's argued religion. He knows psychological crap is the whole thing you're arguing against. That really doesn't have anything to do with logic. It has to do with the crap people have in psychology. So yes, the idea that being alive, that somehow you believe you're winning because you're alive, just alive, okay, and that all these people think they're in some position where they're, oh, I'm going to start winning any day now. So even though the whole life can be just examples of losing ground, they still think they're winning. That isn't just psychological bullshit? Come on. All right. So, if being dead actually was better than being alive, well, the fact is you haven't done it, right? So what's your comparison? Right? I mean, I can imagine being dead. Now, can't you? Can you imagine being dead? Well, being dead is not existing. Okay. Being alive is being vulnerable to tragedy, hardship, misery, suffering, death, pain, all of that shit. So, yes, if I was to choose, you know, for the future, okay, not this life, but if I was to say, do I want to play again? Okay, I'll clearly state, no, okay, I know it's not worth the risk. Because, yes, all my ambitions are bullshit. Okay, the whole thing is bullshit. It's made out of bullshit. It's evolution. It's a biological organism seeking, okay? It smells tasty. It's this, you know, it's all just being controlled by, you know, a bunch of sensations that are fooling you, okay? They're not telling you the truth. I mean, obviously, you know, people have already made the argument, you know what I mean? You can construct some alien that could be the most hideous, disgusting, ugliest thing on Earth, and yet still has sex, right? You know, it thinks it's beautiful. Come on. So, you know, this psychobabble crap of saying, well, what do you subjectively think? It's not about what you subjectively think, it's about what you objectively understand. And understanding that I'm a robot, that I'm completely controlled by a bunch of, you know, shit that happened to me when I'm 6 years old, okay? Oh yeah, I'm still trying to make up for that time when that kid beat me up and humiliated me or some other kind of bullshit, you know, that I'm still seeking, you know, based on, you know, all of that bullshit. And you don't think that's what makes human beings? A bunch of psychological shit? and you're going to tell me that you know for a fact that because most people will say they're winning and that they want to keep winning, that somehow that proves life's worth living? I don't think so. It's not a very good proof, okay? Psychological crap isn't a very good proof. And again, if you're going to use that argument, then why are you arguing against religion? Clearly, the vast majority of people think it's a good idea to believe this bullshit. So where do you come off objecting to that majority? Or haven't they proven it's the right philosophy by all saying it? You know, I mean, that's how stupid this is. So you're going to tell me that you can't sit there and look at a person's life, look at people walking the street, and sit there and identify people who are probably losing money, so to speak. They're losing value. They're either causing harm to the people around them, or they themselves are so fucking miserable that you wouldn't want to exist in their cruddy little psychologically battered brain. You know, they go home every night and vomit their dinners and do all kinds of stuff, and, you know, they live a horrible life of psychological desperation and pain. And you would want to live that life. Fuck you. I don't think so. And indeed, give everyone death. So the idea isn't to give anybody death. The argument is there anything to be gained by living? Especially if you change the rules enough where you have to be accountable for your own gratification. You can't take it from something else. Okay? You can't steal from something else. That is, you can't be the Olympic champion by making a bunch of losers. You know, you take away all your rights to force something else to get an F so you can be satisfied getting a D. All right, take away all the crap that makes it appear like you're winning, all right, and you won't feel like much of a winner, okay? If the standards are, well, how far from perfect is this? Well, guess what? It's always going to be a million miles from perfect unless you create the imperfect for you to make comparisons to. So you're just, again, cheating the argument by saying, I'm just going to make this bogus comparison. All right, it's only human things to, it's the only humane thing to do. So that's another argument here, okay? Again, about this is a conversation we're having about just human beings when this, the problem of being sentient and being feeling and being capable of being tortured and being a Frankenstein monster is a problem all these other sentient creatures also in that dilemma. And they have no reasoning skills. You know, they can't do what we can do, which is understand the context of their existence, the context of their suffering, the context of their actions. They don't understand. So we have to be their bus driver. That's just a fact. We're the smartest thing in the room. We have to take responsibility and recognize that their welfare is in our hands. Nothing else can come to the rescue. And you haven't even touched on that part of many anti-natalists are veggie vegans. Many anti-natalists understand that this story is a lot deeper than do human beings think they're winning. That's not the subject. Is life winning? Is killing 99% of the things brought into existence in, you know, minutes of their being brought into existence, is mass murdering the children of evolution, 99% of the children, murdering them, a great idea? Is that a good plan? Is that a benevolent creation? Fuck you. Yeah, that's what I gotta say to that. Right? Question mark? Anyway. Anti-natalism is really just a whitewashed Cthulhu cult. So who the fuck, again, this whole idea, you know, so if you're empathetic and risk-averse, and if you recognize your own, the bullshit that runs you, okay, that you're, you know, there's nothing beautiful about your selfish and self-obsessed perspective, that it is really kind of ugly, that you have probably spent most of your life just trying to manipulate people into not annoying you, okay, in some way, and that your capacity to love anything in a genuine way, that is, because it doesn't have pert tits. I mean, are you really going to make the argument that you can look inside of yourself and see how you have measured things and how you have valued things and see anything other than corruption in how you've done all of that? What you've cherished and what you've neglected in this world. Even the whole idea of natalism, the whole idea that a child is defined by it being your child. The biggest truth that matters about being child, the category of child, the thing that really matters is which one is mine? Which one did I have? Which one has my genetic code? You don't see how ugly that is, how insanely ugly it is for people to sit there and say, I'm going to ignore what it is. I'm going to ignore the content of its character, and I'm just going to judge it because it's white like me, because it's got my special little genetic code. You don't see how pathetically ugly that is as an ideal, as something beautiful to do on Earth. Is to sit there and cheat all the other children, give them no love, give them no concern, give them nothing, and give everything based on this insanely silly, insipid bias you have? Come on. Grotesque. You know, and you're going to call somebody who thinks that might be crap a cult? And you're not going to call the cultist? The frickin' eugenicist, the fucking racist, the fucking, all the nepotists, you're not going to call the nepotists a cult? You're not going to call them having a psychological disease? Their nepotism is disgusting. It's disgusting. My country, my city, my town, my frickin' house. My house is better than their house. Is that any fucking better? Can you utter a single sentence of all this bullshit, the defending nepotism, for fuck's sake, as anything else but, you know, making some contrived nonsense argument that somehow human beings in the 20th century or the 21st century are being controlled by evolution and they can't help but, be bigots? You're bullshit. Oh, you're pathetic. All right, anyway. And there is no way to get around this consequence. The consequence of what? You labeling it a cult because it's cheap and easy. Right? So why do you bother arguing Jesus? He wrote some book like Space Jesus or something. Why do you acknowledge Jesus as being anything but a cult? Why don't you use that rhetoric on the religious and see how persuasive you're going to be? Oh, that's right, you won't be persuasive at all. Oh, anyway, because it absolutely requires defending the premise, being alive causes enough such suffering. So this is, this might be a real argument. All right, being alive causes enough suffering such that not being alive is better. So having sentient life on Earth is either a good idea or a bad idea. Now, you're saying it runs a profit and that you would start it on Mars. So that's the consequence of your argument. So your argument is that if you had the power, you are so confident life runs a profit, that you would impose by putting playing the evolution game on Mars. You would put sentient creatures, you'd fill oceans full of them, okay, eating them each other, having 100-to-1 survival rates for their children, okay, 100 dead kids for every one kid that survives. Insane ratios that are even crazier than that. I mean, the sea turtle one, 10,000-to-1, 20,000 maybe. 20,000 dead turtles for every one that makes it to have, hey, I got to fuck the bitch. Yeah. You know, you go through all these animals in these terrible circumstances. I mean, these sea lions, elf and seals, apparently it's like 100 to 1 even though survival's like 1,000 to 1, okay, ever getting laid is even a bigger, worse number, because yeah, the winners get all. The winners take all. The winners do all the bitch owning, and the rest of them are just shark food. The rest of them only exist to die for the king. That's the life you would impose. So you really would recreate the whole theater of medieval human life, where men charged each other with fucking wooden hammers and bashed each other's skulls in, and then lay half dead on the field for a few days. You think that's a win? Fuck you. I mean, fuck you. You're just too stupid. You're being fair to the argument by making some, you know, absolutist statement. Being alive causes enough suffering such that not being alive is better. Yes, it's a real question. And your answer is in the affirmative. You think it's good enough. No matter how bad it is, it's good enough. How bad does it actually have to get? Do we have to have World War III and World War IV and World War V? I mean, how bad does it actually have to get before you say, okay, I'll concede it's not a great function. It's not good enough. And that's the definition. It's not good enough. And it really can't be good enough, because it's premised on a negative. You don't come into the world saying, everything's fine, I feel great. No, you come into the world hungry. You come into the world irritable. You come into the world needing comfort. You need temperature. You need this. You need that. You come into the world starving. You don't come into the world satisfied. All right. And you never get over it. Okay, because that's not the ambition. Evolution's ambition is not to make you happy. It's to keep you searching and hunting for gratification and comfort. It's to keep you motivated to keep running and running and running. And this running game is just made out of a lie that you're going to win it. Because you're not. Anyway, too stupid. I'll be back. Alright, we're back. So, it should be noted that imposition, so even though this goes on and on and on for miles and miles, the imposition, argument from imposition never comes up. He never even argues that the fact is that, yes, you have a philosophical position, and one of the real questions is, do you have a right to impose your optimism, your positive impression of what life does on this planet, onto something else? Do you have a right to impose aliveness on objects? And I would argue, no, there's no such right. It's completely offensive and obnoxious to tell me my life is worth living, to believe that it is. Okay, that you can overrule my judgment and say I should be imposed upon and told that you're doing the right thing by injecting me into existence. Bullshit. You can't defend that action as anything else but a rape. It's just you saying I will minimize your pain and maximize some perception of gain. Okay, the gain of the parents, whatever that is. Okay, they satisfied some need they have, obviously. They don't have kids to satisfy any, you know, nobody has a kid to cure cancer. You know, so let's not, you know, pretend anyone's doing that. They're making golf or tennis champions out of their kids. They're not trying to make them into some kind of, you know, useful human. You know, better at cleaning shit up. They're not making the best janitor in the world. They're not doing any of that. Okay, anyway. So, this sentence, this is just, okay, yet this can, so we just pointed out that, yes, okay, anti-natists probably believe that being alive causes enough suffering such that being not alive is better. So that, yes, life is more pain than gain, and therefore, you shouldn't make one because it makes more negative than it makes positive. And it could be argued from the Benetarian asymmetry and my own zero-sum argument that there's no positives. There's only undoing negatives. So all there is to prevent bigger negative. That's all you can do, is make the mess less messy. That's it. You can clean the dirt, but you can't make anything out of it. Okay. Yet this cannot be defended. Okay. Yet this cannot be defended. So you can't defend the argument that life causes more pain and suffering and that things are better off not being alive. Okay. If you then import a new premise, well, if you import a new premise, then you're making a completely different argument. I don't even understand how. Why would I even try to make importing a new premise compatible with the existing premise? That would be stupid. Okay. It's white. No, it's black. Why would I say those two should be compatible? Okay. With a conflicting utility function. So whatever the fuck that is. So this is just, you just marvel at the jargon people use. Okay. Import a new premise with a conflicting utility function. Okay. What does that mean? Oh, you mean a value axiom? That you're going to tell me it is valuable whether you can see it or not? It's magic value? It's dark value? I mean, you know, it has all the, it looks like value except it doesn't have any substance. I don't know. Being alive does not cause enough suffering such that not being alive is better. So I don't even know, what the fuck? Yeah, that's the whole subject. Don't you understand? The whole subject is which one of those statements is correct. That it's more gain than pain, or more pain than gain. And do you know that truth with enough authority to impose it? Are you certain enough that you're going to do your kid a favor by having it? That it's going to, in some way, benefit from, you know, instead of being this crayon, right, it's going to be so much better off as a sentient being. And then again, you have to realize that its welfare is made out of the welfare of all the other stuff in the environment it affects. So it's got to be in the best interest of its wife, whatever it marries, or husband, you know. That somehow it's the best possible choice they could have made. You know, the best possible circumstances. Somehow their influence is going to be net positive on everything they touch and feel. Like every time they stop somebody from going somewhere to say hello, that they prevent them from getting run over by a car and horribly, you know, die worse than they would have died. Again, this whole argument of, you know, there could have been somebody flying in one of those planes that the Arabs, you know, wiped out, you know, that killed people like that. There could have been somebody in that plane who, yeah, they would have been diagnosed with cancer tomorrow and their life would have been an absolute hell. And you did nothing, you know, the fact is they are better fucking off. It's just a fact. You want to pretend it's not a fact? That such circumstances do exist and that such lives are like that. And you could have every good intention in your life and do nothing but degrade the circumstance that everything has to live in. I mean, there could be something, you know, every little butterfly wing flutter. You know, you could have created your tornadoes. You know, tornadoes that went across empty ground versus a tornado that plowed through the city, you know, and, you know, caused a bunch of people to become paralyzed and all kinds of shit. I mean, it's just too silly an argument. Obviously, we don't live in a world where we can just sit there and make these choices, because it is the how you die, not just being dead. Being dead isn't the subject. How we die is part of the subject. The need for us to retain our dignity, you know, through that process. The last thing you want to do, you know, in the last moments of your life is, oh, let me go think about all the times I was humiliated or embarrassed or I did something really, really, really fucking stupid. No, that's not what you would want to do. That's not preferable. But circumstances are going to dictate what happens and how it happens. And we're making those circumstances through our conversation and what people think. And you're just saying, be arrogant, obnoxious rapists. You're just making the argument from, go ahead and rape your children. Because that's what you're doing. You're using them, gaining your gratification, and putting them at risk of, psychological harm for decades. You're just minimizing the risk to somehow justify your ambition. It's disgusting. Okay, anyway. Hence saying, making people dead causes more suffering than letting them live. Making people dead. So this is the second premise. So apparently, making people dead causes more suffering. So this is almost too silly. Because we know that any of the suffering that's being caused are by parasites. I mean, things that are already using something else to gain their gratification, which is already a crime, frankly. You don't make things into slaves to your existence. That's not a nice thing to do. Yeah. Than letting them live. So again, and letting this whole idea, and again, this has nothing to do, okay, with the simple solution to the dilemma, which is don't create it. Okay, go ahead, play out your theater. Okay, but it's a play. You don't sit there and send it to a new city. You don't redo it. You don't keep building the sets and keep doing all this crap. Keep, you know, breaking the little ballerina's hips, for this pointless exercise. Play your videotapes, enjoy your theater, and be done with it. All right, simply is a refutation of the antinatalist's own premise. So again, it doesn't make any sense. Yes, it would be a refutation of my premise to say that somehow life is profitable. When, yes, no, my premise is it's not profitable. Okay, you're not going to make any money. You're going to lose money. So if you're going to just evaluate it as a function, it's insufficiently efficient. So you don't do it. You spend the money somewhere else. You do something else with your ambitions. Okay, you find something else to do. Because this will create more poo than food. All right. Because being alive does not cause enough suffering such that not being alive is better. So he says the same thing over again. Is literally the denial of being alive causes enough suffering such that not being alive is better. Yes, of course. One of them denies the other. One is saying life is profitable. The other one is saying life isn't profitable. And again, the story is about life. It's not about your individual life. It's not about your individual delusions. Some lives aren't as bad as other lives. Okay, some people are tortured more than other people. Some animals are tortured more than other animals. We're talking about, you know, the net product. And the net product is, by evolution standards, for every child that lives to, you know, reaches maturation, you kill dozens, okay, of children. You mass murder dozens of children in brutal and horrible ways, have them fed to the snakes, so to speak, and the crocodiles, for your glorious gold medal winner. And you think that's profitable. I think it's obscene. Just as I could make the argument about the Olympics or any other thing that humans think is a great idea. And I would argue it's a stupid, idiotic, moronic idea. All of this wasted effort to do something silly, better than anybody else, and to make a bunch of paralyzed kids to do it. What sense does that make? That makes sense to somebody? You would paralyze a kid to have a football game, to watch the Super Bowl. If it said right before the game, press this button to paralyze the kid so you can watch your football. You'd press the button. I wouldn't. It makes us very different people. All right. Death is the absence of all pain. No, death isn't. Non-existence is. Okay, death. You don't need to be dead. You don't need to be a living thing that now became a dead thing to be non-existent. You're non-existence before your birth. Okay? So, that's the non-existence of pain. But whatever. I mean, yes, clearly there's no risk to being dead. There's no downside. There's no downside, except your little individual narrative, your little storybook of you, the individual, ends. And that's it. But there's nothing else. And that story is going to end anyway. You're not going to remake it by reinitiating the game. It's not going to be you, you idiot. The person in the future is just going to be a new person that's going to have to relearn all the life lessons, make all the mistakes, do all the crap all over again. You can't see how tedious and pointless that is? Well, I guess you're just not old enough yet. Okay? I don't know, I was old enough as a teenager, but I'm just saying it's, you know, as you get older, it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. This is just a story, and I just don't want to put the book down. But that's a psychological problem. That's psychology. That isn't fucking goddamn intelligence. Yeah, anyway. So the only reason death can ever be bad, so death can't be bad, is that it ends something good. So that's his logic. So he says that's being smart. Okay? Is to understand that there's the only bad part about being alive is that you die and it ends the good. Sorry, it's a lot more to it than that. I mean, that's just vacuous from the reality. All right, which requires admitting life is not only good, but so good as to warrant outlawing death. So just an amazing statement that something should perpetually exist in a state of misery because something else is happy. So if that was the real test, that you had to condense all of life into just, you know, two life forms. One of them that felt all the pain, and one of them that felt all the pleasure, or experienced them all. And they had, many lifetimes to do all this experiencing. So you just took all the life on Earth and you said, okay, we have a trillion years, and just two individuals are going to experience everything experienced. And one of them's going to have all the good, and one of them's going to have all the bad. And you're saying that's a game worth playing. I'm saying there's no chance. There's no chance I'm pressing the button to be the winner if I know I'm creating that loser. Because I'm not cruel and sadistic and insanely, a glutton for punishment. A glutton for cruelty. So, I mean, what can I, really, so at what point do I have the right to say, well, gee, isn't that, aren't you being insanely selfish and, you're being so rude to the real cost of existence by making a statement like this, that life is so good, okay, that we should force things to perpetually exist in torment. you can't sell that. You can't sell this harmless argument. It's so fucking harmless. Being alive is a harmless circumstance. No, it's not harmless. You have to pay a price for it. And the argument is you have to defend what we do as somehow having enough value to justify the torture. That somehow, again, if I had four kids and one of them dies of cancer in a horrible manner, that somehow I think it's worth it. It's worth it to you to force something to be tortured, okay, because you think you're winning, and you're winning enough. So you wouldn't mind winning the gold medal and looking over the theoretical cost of it. So seeing all the other disappointment, I mean, all the guys who are going to be drunks for the rest of their life because they didn't win, all the people who blew it because of some stupid circumstance. You're going to know that there was a guy who was just as good as you or better than you, but he just happened to break his leg and, he's out of luck. And then all the kids that spent decades, instead of learning how to be a doctor or doing something constructive, they spent decades trying to perfect their technique and failed to do so, failed to be good enough. And had to go through the rest of their life just wasting a whole section of their life, in this disciplined and ambitious pursuit. They did everything, they did it all right, except they just failed. You know, it's like they walked the tightrope perfectly and, you know, they just made one tiny mistake and it didn't work. You know, or they were 4 feet tall and they thought they were going to be a basketball player. Some kind of bullshit like that. And you would feel good holding your medal. Look, I win. So you'd feel good winning a lottery, for example. You know, the money is made out of a bunch of people losing money they really should have spent on their kids or on their wife or on something better. And you're going to take all that money and say, good, I win. And feel good about it. Well, I'm saying that's psychological crap. If you're feeling good about that kind of crap, then you are just a rapist. You are just a piece of shit. You are a person whose values are deplorable. You are a sicko. Okay. So the antinatalist has set themselves a doomed project. So I don't know. So he somehow is proving it's a doomed project because they somehow have to believe two conflicting statements. They have to believe life is a net profit and life is a net loss, and they have to believe both of those statements at the same time. And so, oh yes, that's a doomed project. Yes, that's a doomed project. I'll agree. All right. They want a certain outcome to have their cake and eat it too. So again, we know that's, you know, a bullshit statement in the sense that, you know, you can't have two conflicting circumstances being true. And you're saying there's something conflicting in the clear statement of somebody saying it's too risky. So somebody walking up to a Las Vegas table where they have a 1 in a trillion odds of winning and they say it's too risky, you're saying they have some sort of dilemma. That they can't make this judgment. Yeah, they can. Oh, God. It's just too silly. Being against all having kids and being against genocide and suicide. So, again, the two subjects have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And the only time any, like, especially suicide has nothing to do with this subject. Again, an individual's decision where they personally don't have enough ambition to contrive the means to perpetuate their existence means that, yes, why would you contrive it for them? Why would you pretend to know they're not getting how profitable their existence will be? You know, if they can't see it themselves, why would you build that for them? Why? Why do they need to want to live? Explain it to me. What's going to be lost by their suicide for them personally? If they already don't want to continue reading the book, why are you telling them, no, you really want to keep reading the book? Why? How are you so sure that it's all going to be, oh yeah, they're going to say, gee, I really love that next chapter and it was really just so fascinating. No, they obviously aren't hungry. Why are you contriving saying something like, well, why don't you just sit around for a while until you get hungry again? Why should they bother? All right. Anyway, but there is simply no logically coherent way to get that outcome. So this just makes no sense. The outcome of what? Resolving a duality that doesn't exist. There's a truth about existence. That's the whole point here, is to sit there and say, okay, I'm going to make arguments as a thinking machine, as a doer of logic, and I'm going to try to make arguments to you explaining the actual truth. And the actual truth is there's nothing to be gained. Evolution invented one value instrument. Ouch. And then it made you think you're winning when it didn't whip you. So it invented the whip. It never invented a carrot. There's no carrots. There's just the whip. And evolution learned, okay, evolution used the simple truth that all it needs is the one weapon. It just needs a pusher. It doesn't need a puller. It can do it all with the pushing mechanism. It can push you through survival. It doesn't need to pull you. And that's a huge fact. So if that's a fact, if it is actually true, that there are no real goods, there's just immunities from bad. Immunity from bad is good. Cure of a disease, good. prevention of a disease, good. Prevention of poverty, good. These are all goods. Goods of preventing your loneliness, or preventing your angst, or preventing your worry, or preventing all that crap is the stuff we call a good. And all those things come from preventing a negative, not from actually producing a positive. Again, you can't, you know, it's almost so damn trivial to sit there and say, okay, let's look at our the most important experience we have, you know, as a sensation, the orgasm, right? And we could say, well, I could just do that forever. You know, what's the harm in that? And but to not to realize that, why does it feel good? Oh, that's right, because every moment of our existence, we're harassed, okay, by the tension, by all kinds of physical construction, compression, just gravity itself. I mean, it hunches us over, it's, you know, flattens your ass, it's doing all this stuff, everything, you know, and there's all subtle little miseries, little digestive this, little heart that, little blah blah blah. And yes, what for a moment, okay, all that goes away, and that's what you're really experiencing. You're experiencing immunity from life. You're experiencing what it is to be relieved of the burden, okay? You're the camel, and for a moment, they lift the straws off your back, and you say, oh, god damn, that feels great. And then they slide it back on again. You know, slow but sure, you come to realize I'm back where I was. I'm in the shitty boat that smells and all this stuff, and I don't have any fresh air and all that kind of crap. So you can just compare it to, this is just a relief mechanism. The same, and you can compare it to, you know, the physiology of a sneeze and what really happens when you sneeze. Well, you reboot. You know, it's this huge reboot that just takes place. Boom. You know, and for a moment, okay, you're free of where you are. You're dead. Yeah. You know, but still conscious, okay? But yes, you escape your reality of your nervous tension, the noise that's going on every moment of your existence where you're not in those euphoric states. And again, what kind of silly, minute percentage of your real life do you spend in those states? You know, truly comfortable. I mean, how much time do you spend, you know, truly comfortable? Anyway. Let's see. Get to that, and I'll finish this paragraph. Logically coherent way to get to that outcome. Yet, they will haul out much hand-waving and harumphing and attempts to deny this and stick to their self-contradiction. So, again, this is just such a straw man. It's such a pile of crap about these contradictions. There's some contradiction in, again, recognizing that this looks awful risky. It looks dangerous. It looks, you know, like, why would I bother? What is the incentive? So again, you're still arguing that somehow you are confident that the risk of torture is so minimal and that the price of it, if it happens, it's okay. You're so certain. How are you so certain? So even if Antinalist just says, I'm too uncertain to choose, it's too bold a statement. It's too bold an act. I won't act in somebody else's welfare like that. I don't want the job of gambling with their welfare. You're saying that statement is somehow fallaciously, you know, somehow it's obviously logically incoherent. When, in my opinion, it's the most coherent conclusion you could draw is that it's too dangerous. This is what our brain is designed to do, is protect us from doing something dangerous and stupid. You know. All right. But what if we never get in those, let's see. But what we never get in those desperate flailings is facts or logic. So again, what a pile of crap. So there's lots of logical arguments, and again, the metaphors are, in my opinion, the real the power of the argument. So again, I'm metaphoring you as a rapist. So what about your pro-life position isn't rapey? You're saying you know best. You will impose. You have a right to impose because there's some, you have certain knowledge that en masse it's a great idea. Nothing but profit. No chance of devastating loss. Fuck you. You know, you got nothing. You got no facts or logic to defend your position, your pro-life position. There's no facts or logic. You're like some dopey Christian, pro-life. Oh, it's a soul. We have to protect it. Why? It's going to hell. That's the odds, right? The odds are it's going to hell. So you're doing it a big favor by killing it. Shit. You know, you're guaranteeing it heaven because it can't commit any sins. Shit. I mean, truly, isn't it what you're doing? You're guaranteeing it a trip to heaven forever, all right? Where if you let it be born, you're almost, you know, you got a 99 out of 1 chance it's going to hell. So fuck. Of course, you have to do the, you have to abort it. It's the only the right thing you could possibly do if you're a Christian, if you believe in that fable. It's the best thing you can do for the poor little fucker. You're talking about its immortal soul, okay? You want to save its immortal soul? Don't let it step on Earth, because once it steps on Earth, it's going to step on some kind of Jesus totem pole. It's going to commit some sort of sin that's going to guarantee it's going to hell. Forever. Well, anyway. So enough of a video. But, oh, God. People are just such douchebag retards. All these words, all this mush. It's just such an evasion of the subject. Just evaded entirely. And again, the argument's made on the opposite. I mean, Schopenhauer's 2 books this thick to say life sucks. Oh, come on. You know, no. It doesn't take that much to point out how it's a farce. We're just robots. The whole thing is just disgustingly silly. You know, chasing bullshit, watching drama, bloodlust. It's just disgusting. Yuck. All right, anyway. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. This has been DoNotGod.com video presentation. And of course, yes, Google is just so fucking evil. Shit. You can't even, you know, I've been messing with apps lately, you know, and the Android thing. It's just, they've ruined, you know, the Play Store has just ruined Appery. The whole environment's been destroyed by Google. You can't find anything. You can't. Nothing's relevant. It's just, you know, nothing's described accurately. It just all sucks. You have to go through 15 different versions of an app before you find the one that actually works. Ugh.